The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke. Glory to you, O Lord. Jesus said to his disciples, "Be sure of this. If the master of the house had known the hour when the thief was coming, he would not have let his house be broken into. You also must be prepared, for at an hour you do not expect, the Son of Man will come." Then Peter said, "Lord, is this parable meant for us or for everyone?" And the Lord replied, "Who then is the faithful and prudent steward whom the master will put in charge of his servants to distribute the food allowance at the proper time? Blessed is that servant whom his master, on arrival, finds doing so. Truly, I say to you, he will put him in charge of all his property. But if that servant says to himself, 'My master is delayed in coming,' and begins to beat the men servants and the maid servants, to eat and drink and get drunk, then that servant's master will come on an unexpected day and at an unknown hour, and will punish the servant severely and assign him a place with the unfaithful. That servant who knew his master's will, but did not make preparations nor act in accord with his will, shall be beaten severely. And the servant who was ignorant of his master's will, but acted in a way deserving of a severe beating, shall be beaten only lightly. Much will be required of the person entrusted with much, and still more will be demanded of the person entrusted with more." The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite conclusions to the pericopes that we have in the lectionary in our cycle of readings. It was like, which camp do we want to be in? The one of the severe beating, or the one deserving the severe beating and beaten only lightly? Do you know? It's like, I'll take a light beating, please. You know, it's like, not the severe one if I can avoid it. There's a lot going on in the passage, and there's more to it than that, of course, because you know if we focus on the beatings, then we'll forget the first part of the passage where Jesus says there's a faithful and prudent steward whom the master will put in charge of his servants to distribute the food allowance at the proper time. I mean, this sense, of course, he will put him in charge of his property if he finds him doing so on his arrival. It's interesting because in the passage right there is a sense of, you know, there is a group, whether it's leadership or otherwise, there's a group that's entrusted with this task. Right, good stewardship over the household, and whether or not that's happening. Yeah. So when Peter asked Jesus, you know, is this us or everyone? Is this us or the whole? We should see the whole picture or whatever. He's talking about, is it the whole of Israel? Right. And Jesus gives us some indication that, yeah, that's what he's talking about. He's talking about Israel. And I think there are any number of ways to work our way through the passage, knowing that Jesus is talking about Israel, and he's talking about, what is it, the return of the master to his household. And we know, at least we have some sense from Jesus' direct teaching and the other stories that he's telling, the picture language that he's using, that he is proposing to be in himself, he is God visiting his people. So he is God returning. He is the master returning to his household. And so then, you know, we have probably at least three ways that this passage can be applied. If we look at, say, the leadership of Israel, those entrusted with the scriptures and their interpretation and application, those who shape the national life of Israel as a people, perhaps those who are forming the imagination of Israel as to who or what they should be as a people, right? We have leadership. Then we have Israel as a whole. Israel as a whole entrusted with the blessing of God and called to be a light to the nations. Yeah, and then we have, I think, perhaps a little more ratcheted up sense here, we have the disciples, we have the apostles, we have the followers of Jesus. And so there, and I don't know which way we want to take it. I mean, I want to say probably too much about each of them, and I'll refrain from doing that. But I think that what we see is there is certainly judgment in God's arrival on the scene, and that judgment is a putting to rights of the whole. And then it's like, okay, well, are we lined up or are we not? We start to hear this language in St. Paul, like righteousness, right? And justification. Are we lined up with God or are we not? And we see the judgment that befalls Israel as a nation and their leaders, right? In, say, whether it's Jesus's death, and then say the precipitation of that particular conflagration, or the condemnation of the city, of God's city, that we see then, the destruction of the temple itself and all of Jerusalem in 70 AD. This is all kind of tightly woven together. But what does it mean for us except to reissue the call of yesterday, to say to be vigilant, right? In the sense that we have been entrusted with something, and we are to be found when we are held to account, whenever that being held to account is. I would say that, can I say, is like bracketed, our being held to account happens all the time. It should happen all. I mean, anytime we turn to God in prayer, anytime we drop to our knees in prayer, do we not find ourselves judged? Good if we are, in the sense that we find God wanting to make us right, wanting to put our lives in order and have us live better for Him and in praise of Him, giving Him glory, right? Offering Him as His priests our hearts and our lives, and then taking what He gives, His own life of blessing, His own Spirit, and being indwelt by His Spirit living in us and working through us, we then become the people set right who are looking to set right the world. Not set right the world like, you know, wag the finger, but set right the world being transformed by His love at work in us and working through us. We're able to bring that love to life in the world, to raise it up, because this is what the world needs. It needs a new sort of being set right that isn't this kind of like, you know, wagging our fingers and pointing and shouting at each other. That's not going to get anyone anywhere. We need to be raised up in love so that we can have new relationships and new order. Right, an order that releases all from captivity, from their bondage to sin, from ignorance and all the rest, in order to live fully for God and His purposes. And anyway, this is in the end, this is what Jesus, of course, is accomplishing. But it is this, right? I mean, here we see at every step we do have an us and we do have a them. This is the pattern that no matter what our interpretation of this passage is, we have an us and we have a them. We have an us, those who are called to be stewards of God's household, those who are called to be stewards of the things of God, and them, I don't know, maybe the members of the household or people more broadly or what, depending on the interpretation. But the reality, I mean, I have to assume that the reality is, because we're coming here, you know, day by day and doing this, right? We're offering our hearts and our lives to God and receiving from Him the strength of His own life of love so that we can be about His work in the world. I have to believe that we are part of the us, right? The we that are called together for the plan and purpose of God. And so because we have been called and we're responding, yes, my friends, we have to be about the plan and purpose of God truly in everything we think and say and do. We can't, you know, we can't be the steward who says, you know what, good enough, you know, autopilot from here, you know, easy coasting, whatever it is, right? And start to figuratively or maybe even literally beat, you know, the maid servants and the men servants, right? And abuse them and not give them what God intends them to receive. We think about that. And it, the steward is entrusted with that task of providing for the household what the household needs. So again, the we is those of us, we who are entrusted with the great gift of God, his own life. And are we then giving? Are we apportioning to the others or the other or the them what it is God intends them to receive from us? So if we find ourselves in a situation, as I say, moment by moment in our day, find ourselves in a situation where we can ask, what is the most loving thing to do here? Now I'll say this, if you find that question on your mind, it wasn't simply me and my wisdom that sowed that seed. It was God who allowed you to receive it, and he's watering it as well. Because otherwise, we're too selfish to ask that question. So God is stirring us up in charity to ask that question. What is the most loving thing to do here? And you better believe that if you can think of the most loving thing to do, then God intends you to do it. That's the gospel. That's the gospel. This is what's happening here. And if you're not apportioning to the maidservants and the menservants what God intends them to receive, then, my friends, you are going to get a heavy beating. You're going to get, I had to tie back into the scriptures. You're going to get a severe beating, okay? So don't get a severe beating. You know, we don't have to. What we have to do is be awake, be alive to the fact that God is blessing us. And he is blessing us that we might be a blessing. It's not for ourselves. Don't let the consumer mentality of our modern society affect you in that way. We're not being blessed for ourselves. We are blessed in order to be a blessing. That's what God intends. And good for us. Good for us that we do it. And even in the action of doing it, is our being set right? Right? In the action of doing it, we find ourselves actually blessed by being a blessing.